Welcome to the Igniting Souls podcast with Carrie Oberbrunner. Carrie believes if you want to experience clarity in business and in life, then discovering who you are, why you're here, and where you're going is a must. The Igniting Souls podcast is dedicated to help you do just this. And now, here's Carrie.
Hey, welcome. It's Carrie Oberbrunner with the man himself, Dan Miller. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing excellent. Just loving life in this crazy wild year. What's not to love?
Dan, first of all, is this even possible? 48 days of the work you love. Let's talk about this.
You know, I would not have that book in its 20th anniversary edition in hardback if I didn't firmly believe it was possible. And at this point, if I didn't have the testimonial of a whole lot of people who have proven it to be true, the message wouldn't survive.
Absolutely. So,
yeah, I believe it more than ever.
I'm living proof. But I'll tell you what, Dan, if I would have found this book years ago, and in other words, like a lot of years ago when it first came out, I probably would have been angry. And I'll tell you why. I would have been angry because I would have looked at this and said, work, love, and I love the new edition, and the life you love. That we'll talk about that in a moment. But I would have been mad at this, Dan, because I would have said, you know what? I've tried so hard, Dan, and I've trusted God, and I've pursued his will, and but I don't think he wants me to have a job that I love. What do you think about that?
Oh, I hear that a lot.
Do you hear that?
God kept me in this job that I hate for so many years.
Oh,
that's so pretty dicey theology.
It is.
Why has God kept me here?
Yes.
I don't believe that really. We don't have a capricious God who does that.
So the fact that God allows us to have choice, free will, and says, even before sin entered planet Earth, you're supposed to do work and you're supposed to find value in work. Like, in other words, work is not some curse that it resulted because we were, you know, sinful. Work was something good. God worked and said that it was good. Talk about that, Dan. Why do we grow up thinking I got to choose the job that I hate and I got to work hard and work has to be painful? Where did we buy into that?
Well, you alluded to it right there. I mean, those of us who are faith-based, some of our theology may lead us to believe that work is a curse. In Genesis, it talks about that. Work was a curse. But one thing we have to realize, Adam and Eve were given the opportunity to work and care for the garden. The most ideal situation, they were to work and care for the garden. All right? So we know gardens require some work. So it wasn't a bad thing. It was a privilege to be sharing with God and taking care of the earth in that way. Then the curse happened. Okay? Work is a curse. That was a real brief period of time. If you flip your Bible over to chapter 8 of Genesis, right there in the beginning, God says, okay, that's it. I'll never curse the earth again. It won't be like that at all again. And from there on, it talks about work as a privilege. You know, work is to please your body.
Ecclesiastes,
Solomon in his most pessimistic time said, to enjoy your work is a gift from God. So
that is amazing.
So there's that. We ought to know without a shadow of a doubt, work is a privilege. Work is a gift.
Wow.
And so are we going to spend 40 hours a week doing something that we don't really enjoy?
Mm.
I hope not. That's the greatest opportunity to be salt and light in the world, to be a testimony that we know what life is all about, is to be doing work that we love. If we don't, it destroys our witness. We are not salt and light. We are not going to be leaving the kind of testimony that we want at all.
I think
I didn't know we'd start off so preachy, but we got that up. way.
Listen, man, people are eating this up. Our church promoted that poor is better and suffering was the only way to prove how spiritual you are. That's listen, my parents didn't teach me that, but that's kind of what I grew up with, Dan. Like the toughest, the hardest, the thing you hate the most, that suffering, you know, that's spirituality. And what I've learned is that that's jacked up theology. In fact, I think, you know, it's oppression. And I think it was Martin Luther who said, make a good shoe and sell it at a fair price. And in that God is glorified, you know? So in other words, like be a craftsman. In fact, you and Joanne love masterful creativity, you know, like talk a little bit about that. Like Joanne is so into the arts and you just appreciate this craftsmanship. How is God glorified when we are excelling at a craft?
Wow. I mean, we know that if God is the God that we believe that he is, the omniscient, benevolent Father, he's going to give us good gifts, just like we give good gifts to our children. That's what we want. I mean, what gives us as daddies more of a thrill than seeing our kids do something really well?
Oh, that's good.
The satisfaction it gives them to do it really well. I think we have the same kind of relationship with our Heavenly Father to do that. So we have not only the opportunity, but the responsibility to use our gifts in really meaningful, creative, beneficial ways, ways that bless us, ways that provide abundance for our families, and provide an overflow from which we can generously serve and give. I mean, it just seems so clear to me. So what does that mean?
Yeah.
What does that mean in a daily situation?
That's right.
You've got to be doing work that is the absolute essence of the best gifts and talents that I have, the utilization of those. And in doing so, it provides abundance for my family. There's no shame in doing well financially.
Yeah.
It verifies that we really understand how God has gifted us, because I don't think he wants us to be groveling at the bottom of the barrel. So in using the gifts that he's given us, it provides abundance for us and our families. We can serve, be salt and light in the world, share with people who are on their way up, with people who may be a little farther behind us. And that's the way I like to view that. Nobody's stuck. Nobody's going to stay at the bottom. And I had somebody recently say, I think that God wants me to be, in essence, a bad example, to use me as an example of what not to be. Oh my goodness, it breaks my heart to think someone would actually think that.
Oh yeah.
This is not all, it's a walk in the park, you know, just we're all going to be rich and famous and easy. No, it's a process for all of us. It takes time. There have been times in my life, and I know you as well, where we've struggled.
Oh yeah.
Where I wasn't sure I was going to pay the electric bill. That's part of the process. I was never content staying there. Mm-hmm. I was never convinced that that was my lot in life. I knew that somehow this is part of the journey that I need to go through. And so I was confident every morning to work through that. In those periods, and you know, I went through a long period of really big financial hole
that
I created. And in that period of time, Joanne, my wife, I think really started to doubt, would we ever have a beautiful house again? Would we ever really be able to share with others liberally and all that? I would cut pictures out of magazines and put them on our refrigerator. This is when we had IRS liens longer than my arm. I mean, it was like we would never get out of this. I'd cut out pictures and say, hey, this is the kind of house we're going to live in. You know, we're working toward this. This is what's going to happen. And it took a period of time, but that confident belief, faith, it's the essence of how we define faith.
Yeah.
Confident assurance of what is going to come, even though we can't see it right now. If we could see it all, it wouldn't require faith. It's just a logical, linear process.
Yeah.
But faith is when we don't know exactly how it's going to work. But
I love it. I love it. I love it.
You believe it's going to happen.
Well, and I think that a lot of us have a bad relationship with money. You know, you look at the villains in most movies growing up, it's like the rich guy, the rich lady, you know, and it's those people. But if you really understand money, that money is exchanged with the creation of value. Think about that for everybody listening. Like, the more value you create for others in life, the more you're compensated. That just alone will wreck some people's brains, because what I learned is that, why would I not want to create more value for people? You see, it's not self-focused. A lot of times we think, oh, if you want more money, you're being more self-focused. Not if you understand that the more people I can serve and help, the more value I create. Talk about that a little bit, Dan, because you know, it's the difference between the whole scarcity where, you know, I got to get pull one over on somebody so I can get paid, versus there's always enough. There's always more. You have this abundance concept. How important is that, Dan, to this book, this 20th anniversary, 48 Days of the Work You Love?
Yeah, it's very important. In our 40 Days Eagles community, we say it requires three things to be successful. The right mindset, the right idea, the right network. Mindset is so important. It's the old Henry Ford adage, whether you think you can or think you can't, you're right. If people expect that now is a time when companies are failing, nobody's hiring, there's no opportunity, that's going to be your reality. If you think, wow, this is interesting, I didn't expect this, what can I discover that I wasn't able to see before? What does this situation make possible? We're seeing people who are coming up with the most amazing ideas, inventions, business progress forward in this period of time. And I don't want to diminish the challenge that a lot of people have faced. Things have been different for us. I mean, I had speaking engagements canceled. I'm sure you did. We aren't able to do any kind of live events. We aren't able to go to live events. There's major changes. But this is going to be a really good year for me, because we've had a lot of fun just experimenting with things that we've never done before. Now, when it comes to that money mindset, in 48 days, part of the resources that we have is a 48-day step-by-step process. Mm-hmm. Day 47 is take a millionaire to lunch.
Oh, that's good.
I have more people get stuck on that.
Take a millionaire to lunch. Yeah. Why? Tell us about that.
Day 47, take a millionaire to lunch. And people get stuck there. I mean, they can write a resume. They can do all the other things that we talk about, personal understanding, their personality and all that. Take a millionaire to lunch and say, well, how could I do that? You know, nobody's going to have time for me. See, the anticipation, that cultural kind of expectation is, you know, millionaires are selfish. You know, they aren't going to give to somebody or even their time to somebody who's just struggling. You know what? I experienced the exact opposite. Who is more greedy with money? It's the person who doesn't have any.
Mm-hmm.
And they hang on to. They're not going to. The person who has abundance, I find those people to be the most generous, gracious, abundant people on the face of the earth. Now, that's a practice I did really young. Somehow I missed the warning that millionaires were too busy to spend time with little farmer kid Dan Miller. I always reached out to people who were very successful. In my family circle, when I was a kid, the most successful person I knew was our family doctor.
Okay.
He would show up at our house out in the country in his big, fine black car, step out with his gorgeous suit on and tie. And I thought, oh my gosh. He was the guy, but he had a lot of time. He encouraged me as a little kid. I went to pre-med. Wow. I went to pre-med because of him.
I didn't know that. Wow.
As a beginning senior, because I decided I wasn't interested in the body and blood and intestines that much, so I changed. But he was a major influence. But that piece, take a millionaire to lunch. And I'm thinking, you don't understand how generous people are with their time. people who are extremely successful are more likely than anybody to say, well, sure. Now, be careful in how you set that up. Don't say, you know, take me to lunch and pick up the tab because I'm poor and you're no.
See, that's good. That's good.
And don't say, gee, I need your help. Say, I'd like to get your advice. I'd like to get your opinion on some things. And we've got questions that we help people structure for that kind of engagement. But, I mean, you get invited to lunch a lot. I certainly do. I love those kind of opportunities to just speak words of encouragement to somebody who's really figuring things out.
Interesting. Interesting.
Having money doesn't make you hard and cynical. Having money makes you see opportunities to be generous with others.
Wow. Wow, that is so good. These are the words of life for someone right now who's saying, I just grew up where, you know, I was told by my dad or my mom, you just got to go to work. You hate it. You come home, you veg out, veg short for vegetable, you know, leave me alone, kids, so I can veg out, so I can be brain dead, so I can go back at it again tomorrow. But Dan, let's talk about 48 days of the work and the life you love. Why did you blend the two? Because that's exactly what that statement says. You can't love your life and hate your job. I think your new subtitle kind of says that, that it's integrated. Talk to us about why it's integrated.
It is so integrated. You've set that up so well. For 20 years, the title of that book has been 48 Days to the Work You Love. And I realized because of the time we spend in that, it's really important. Even in our churches, you know, we have a lot of information about how to live a righteous life and how to treat others well and all that. But we ignore how we're going to spend 40 hours a week or perhaps more. And I thought, wow, you know, that certainly has a bearing on what we're like on the weekend.
Yes.
It's not just what you do for 58 minutes on Sunday morning. What are you doing Thursday morning? That's going to tell people more about you than looking at the back of your head sitting in a church pew.
Interesting. So
we've been developing these concepts for the life, I mean, the work that you love. And I so believe that that's possible for people.
Wow.
But as you say, you can't have a life that you love unless you love your work.
Mm.
And more, I mean, even somebody who's really successful in their work, let's just separate it in that way. So they're doing really well.
Sure.
And they're making $100,000 in their work. Things are going well there. And then they drive home and they pause in the driveway. And they think, wow, I'm not sure I want to go in there because things aren't so pleasant there. That's a tough situation.
Yes.
So you can treat your life, your family, and your life as a business. And I'm very open about that. I want to be just as intentional about my marriage and my personal life as I am about my business. What are my goals? What's my vision? What's my mission for my personal life? And if I treat it with the same kind of care that I do my work, I can make my life something that I love as well as my work.
Good.
They are blended. So I just decided to go ahead and incorporate. I love the fact that we did that in this new version.
Oh, yeah.
40 Days to the Work and Life.
Tell us some, I mean, you don't, trust me, folks, you don't just get to be a 20th anniversary New York Times bestseller by accident. So again, if this was just hype, we don't think we'd see this thing around. But the foreword's by Dave Ramsey. You, of course, I remember you made this book years ago as a three-ring binder at first for Sunday school. But what new things have you included? I see here that even if people have the older version, the new update includes overcoming the upper limit challenge. And by the way, you're speaking on some of this stuff at our Igniting Souls conference, so I cannot wait. But what is some of this upper limit challenge? What is the zone of genius? I think that's your talk at the conference this year. Digital nomads. I mean, we're seeing so much change happen in the workforce. You almost needed to update it from 20 years
ago. I've updated it every 5 years.
Okay.
So it came out in 2000, updated in 2005, 2010, 2015. Now 20, and I'm already making notes for what the 2025 version will have.
Wow.
And I've got a document.
Always growing.
running document. And in this version, about 30% is the original content. Mm-hmm. So the concept of figuring out how has God uniquely gifted you? What are your personality tendencies? What are your values, dreams, and passions, those recurring thoughts? That process for how to do that has remained largely the same. Mm. Look at what's happened in the workplace in the last 20 years. My goodness, so much has changed.
Oh, yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about that upper limit challenge. One of the things that I address in this new version, we all have a sense of what we deserve. And that's what that means. When I work with people who are going in, who are in a transition job-wise, they usually give themselves about a $10,000 window. So if somebody's been used to making $70,000, they'll look at a new job opportunity that pays $65,000 to $75,000. But if there's something that comes across their desk and it pays $130,000 and it's exactly what they do, they often don't even apply because they've already decided that's not for me. I'm not quite at that level.
Why? Like they think it's going to take too much out of me, or I'll be shown that I don't measure up.
That's right.
Okay. Okay.
They'll discover I'm not really that person. I'm somebody else. When you look at titles out here, if we have administrative assistant, and there are administrative assistants who are making $28,000 a year, and there are administrative assistants who are making $200,000 a year. Covers a broad scope there, even under the same title. Wow. But if somebody's not prepared emotionally, mentally, spiritually for success, they'll sabotage it. And let me give you an example of how this happens. So let's say that we find a kid, young kid down in the ghetto in Alabama, lives in abject poverty, but he has a throwing arm like we've never seen. We bring him to Nashville, Tennessee, give him a $10 million bonus, sign him with the Tennessee Titans. You know what often happens?
What?
6 months later, he spent the money and more. He's ruined his career by making bad decisions back where he came from, because his sense of deserving did not match the reality of the success that came so quickly.
Whoa.
Now let's look at the workplace today. So in the workplace, traditionally, you get a 3-4% increase annually. So if you're making that $70,000 and this next year you're going to make $75,000, you can handle that. But a lot of people get into the space that you and I are in, where all of a sudden the mathematics change dramatically, where you created, I know a guy who created a course based on what the work that he was doing, and he released the course on a Friday night, and in 48 hours, made more money than he had ever made in a year. So let's take that example. Somebody comes into this space, they write a book that does really well. They come up with a course. They get involved on Amazon online and have extraordinary success. They're selling.
They scale that thing.
You're bringing in $500,000 a week all of a sudden. So you may go from making that $70,000. You know, what if you 10 times that?
Yeah.
Again, unless you're prepared for that, you'll sabotage it. So we see a lot of people right at the door of success where there's no obstacles there. Everything is green lights and they sabotage it.
Mm.
That's that upper limit challenge. We see it in common. Somebody says they want to be a speaker. Somebody comes to your Ignited Souls conference and says, wow, next year I want to be up on stage. And so the next year they have an opportunity to do that. They're going to come up and do a 5-minute recap of the book they wrote. And they get up that morning and they got a sore throat. Guess what? It's the upper limit challenge showing up.
Oh, this is big, folks. Folks, type in if you just had your mind blown. So you're saying that even physiologically, our bodies don't lie. In other words,
absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. So it tells us this process of finding or creating work you love is not just what's happening in the economy, who's hiring, who's not, what's your academic background, do you need another degree? No, the most important part is right between your own two ears. Who prepared for success has a whole lot more to do than any kind of logical sequence to get you there.
That is so good. I'm with you, Dan. I mean, you and I run in some groups, man, and you know, I'm real honest with people. My listeners, they're amazing. I see Michael here and Amy and all kinds of people. But a few years ago, Dan, I won't tell what group it was, but you know what group it was. I had my opportunity to go into a new group. Yeah. And this new group, you know, more money than I ever invested. Around people more successful than I've ever been around. You know, and there's kind of like you grew up on a farm in Ohio. I grew up as a pastor's kid in Wisconsin, and you know, we ate food from the Salvation Army because that's where my parents worked. You know what I'm saying? Wow. So here I am in this group. But the neat thing is, Dan, I applied for that group back in 2013, and I didn't have even the income to be able to make it into that group. But I kept saying someday. I'm going to be in that group. Someday I'm going to be in that. Someday I'm going to meet that person. Now I'm business partners with that person. But what had to happen was the last 7 years, massive personal growth. Talk about that for a moment. That because I grew up hearing people don't change. It's not what you know. It's who you know. Like all the junk that we get believing. But yet you did it too. I remember when you went to, I think it was Mark Victor Hansen's book thing, and your mind was blown. And all of a sudden, a few years later, you're on stage. So how is this possible? How can some people grow themselves? Like, talk about that. How can you grow yourself so that you become attractive for the job that you want?
Well, the first part of what you shared there is so important because you saw that group. And being a member there was really out of reach.
Oh, however, man.
In the time that transpired, you were not the same person 7 years later. You had already grown dramatically, even though you didn't have access to that group. That when I did my master's thesis, I've never shared this.
Okay, let's hear it. Let's hear it.
All right. In clinical psychology, my thesis was based on a study we did. This was back when growth groups, gestalt groups, were really popular. So my thesis was going to show that participation in a group like that, in a growth group, really accelerated somebody's, we were using Everett Shostrom's personal orientation inventory, measuring self-actualization. So we got some fancy terms here, self-actualization. Yeah. So that was, we measured people's self-actualization on this inventory, went through a 6-week growth group where we were going to teach them all these principles and they would be better at the end. Well, here's what, and research showed that you would match people for age, sex, race, whatever, culture, and then participation in groups always increased their level of well-being. But what wasn't done well was the control group. So here's what I did. Western Kentucky University announced it on campus. I had about 80 kids show up to be part of these groups. And I said, hey, here's the good news. You're all going to go through this group. However, only half of you are going to go through it now. So we're going to have half of you that are going to wait. We're going to take you through, but it's going to be about 6 months. The other group, we're going to start right now, take you through this. So we measured everybody on their level of self-actualization at the beginning. We took people through the growth group and we measured it. And sure enough, their level of self-actualization increased. We also, at the same time, took a new measurement on those who had not yet been through this fancy group.
Okay.
Time had passed. You know what? They had increased as well. What it told us, if somebody has the motivation, the desire for personal improvement, you can't stop them. Even if they're not in a fancy group that they pay money for or have a coach or go get another degree. If somebody has a mindset for growth, you can't stop them.
That is cool. That meant, I totally believe it though, because we've all seen the person who came from the family with the finances, with the schooling. I mean, they had everything created for them, quote, the environment, and they just blew up. I mean, in a bad way. And they went down. And then other people with lives, circumstances totally tough against them, and they just somehow, like a weed, they found their way up to the sunshine and grew. How talk to us about some of these characteristics. In other words, what are some of the characteristics that you're referring to? Like, is it not giving up? Is it not taking? We just had Brenda, one of our teammates. This is one of our core values. She said growth-minded grit, kind of like that Angela Duckworth thing going on. But what are some of those components that you look for that you just say, I know that person's going to be successful in 3 years or 2 years or whatever?
Yeah. You know, this is it's a tough kind of concept because, again, as a parent, we don't want our kids to suffer.
Right.
We want to spare them from that. But then we look all around us in nature and we see that cocoon and we know that has the potential to be a beautiful butterfly. So a little crack opens up in there and we know there's a struggle going on. You know what our tendency is? We want to help that little bugger. We want to open that up. Let's take a scissors and just snip that open. You know what happens if we do that? We get a bulbous form in there that lives for about 24 hours. It never becomes anything beautiful at all.
Whoa.
It has to go through that struggle.
This is good. This is, listen, folks, what Dan just did, I don't know if you caught this, but what Dan just did is he said that right now, if you're struggling, that's exactly the blessing. I mean, this is true. Like all those days where I was in the day job that I didn't feel called to be in, that I knew was not my final resting place, rather than drinking the pain down, smoking the joint, binging on the Netflix, you gotta lean in, right? I mean, embrace the struggle. Ryan Holiday, the obstacle is the way. Marcus Aurelius, what stands in the way becomes the way. Why is that, Dan? I love what you're saying, but you're basically saying to someone right now who doesn't feel like they're in their final resting spot, they can pick up this book. And they can literally, just like this. Oh, I just turned to the page. Here are 10 steps. I don't know if you can see that. Can you see that? Can you read that?
Yes, 10 steps to education. Things you can do this year to open the floodgates of new opportunity and new wealth.
I mean, the book is just totally laced with growth. And I think almost life then says, you know what? This guy's too much work. This woman's too much work. We can't even stop this person anymore. Let's go to somebody easier. What do you think, Dan?
Well, the struggle, oh my gosh. I mean, again, we don't want to bring that on ourselves.
Yeah.
I mean, what I went through years ago when I really crashed and had a long time getting up, I would never wish that on anybody, and I would never want to repeat that.
Talk about that. That was $450,000.
A lot of that is the IRS. Yes. Which doesn't go away no matter what you do.
And so you could have said too much. You know, I'm crumbling. This is who I am. I'll never get out of this. I mean, you could have gone into that victim mindset. What made you break out?
Yeah. There's a couple things in that period of time. And with that massive debt, it was because of a business that I sold at public auction and it didn't bring what I thought it was going to bring. So there's a long story there. Mm-hmm. Banking changed. But I got up the next morning and I didn't point fingers at the banking system or any. I looked at that guy in the mirror and said, okay, dude, you got us into this. How are you going to get us out? A part of that too, and again, this is not something I'm recommending, but just part of my personal story. I grew up, you know, very poor. My dad was a Mennonite pastor of a little church. We eked out a living as farmers. That was part of my cultural upbringing. One of the things out of that culture being your word is your bond.
Yeah.
If you say something, it doesn't have to be written in a 10-page contract. If you speak it, that's all somebody needs. Well, the people that I owed money to were business associates. you know, vendors, people had purchased billboard advertising and things like that. I had given my word to them. So even though the law gave me an out, I mean, I was advised to just file bankruptcy. I said, I can't do that.
Wow.
I never considered it for a nanosecond. And so I told everybody, I don't have anything. You know, you sue me, you'll get nothing. But if you just work with me, I'll pay you something every month.
Wow.
Longer than I anticipated. I thought being an entrepreneur and being optimistic, you know, I'll, a couple of years, I'll knock this out. It took me 12 years. That was a long time. But we didn't, you know, our kids don't even remember that as being a time of suffering.
Yeah.
Because we still had joy and fun in our household. We didn't go on fancy vacations, but we'd get a six pack of tacos and go to the park.
Yeah.
We had game night Tuesday nights at our house. All the kids in the neighborhood wanted to come to our house because it was such a cool place to hang out. Now let me take the financial part of that. So at that point, I had a master's degree in psychology. So I was employable. I was already teaching as an adjunct at the university. I could have gotten a position where I would make, you know, $70,000-$80,000 a year. But again, the debt that you mentioned, I couldn't make the math work on that.
That would have taken you the rest of your life.
If I get that job, I have three small children, wife is a stay-at-home mom. I can't see how I can live and ever repay that. So guess what?
What?
I had to roll the dice as an entrepreneur. The only option for me is something that has no guarantee, no base, no benefits, but no ceiling.
Wow.
Now, with your self-image and self-confidence crushed because of that past experience, it would be easy just to hang my head and say, okay, this is it. I screwed up. I'm never going to have anything. Boom. It's a no. I said, wow, what can I learn from this that I didn't know before? I started going through Proverbs where I would read the chapter that correspond to the day of the month.
Yeah.
Chapters.
Easy. Oh, yeah.
I started seeing things in there and like, holy cow. Why did I not see this before?
I just read it this morning, man. What a great book, Proverbs.
My mindset wasn't prepared to see the message that was there. And I saw all the mistakes that I had made that were laid out right there in Proverbs. And I said, well, I'm not going to make those anymore. So I started that journey back out as an entrepreneur, as with something. I took a position initially that was commission only, door-to-door selling, no guarantee, commission only. And I just got out there and crushed it and started working my way out of that hole. But again, mindset, belief, optimism, spiritual hope, call it what you want, has to be at the forefront to lead us into these new opportunities, to give us the eyes to see opportunities where others see nothing but closed doors, and to give us the confidence we're going to be able to walk through this into a new season of growth and success.
I'm telling you what, Dan, this is like fresh water for people that are COVID hacked, racism hacked, economy hacked, government hacked. I mean, there's literally people right now that woke up. I don't read the news, Dan, okay? And maybe you don't either, but I'll tell you why. Because, you know, just the other day, first thing I got out of bed, I just, you know, grabbed my phone, right? Before my workout, and I saw a fear-laced post. And the fear-laced post on Facebook, I mean, I read it, and I'll tell you what. In my heart, I felt fear, and I'm like, what's going on?
Oh, yeah.
You know, like these days you have to be so on guard because I don't fill my mind with that stuff. And in other words, I'm like you, let's go to Proverbs. Let's go to all these amazing people that are sharing here. But you feed your mind the headlines and you do think nothing ever is going right. And let's talk about that for a little bit. What's the information diet? What's the consumption of somebody who's a 48 days person? Like, what do you recommend?
Oh, my. In the book, I share the story of that really downturn in my life where we had not, the IRS took our house, our cars and everything. I borrowed an old crappy car from a friend of mine. It had I mean, the windows didn't work, air conditioning didn't work, it guzzled oil and all of that. Now, that's what I used to drive where I was doing door-to-door sales.
That I'm saying, buy from me, I'm successful. I know, right? But you had to believe it. I had to believe it. Yeah.
But I knew that my mind was really vulnerable to negative thinking. Uh-huh. I screwed up. I'm deeply in debt. I'm never going to have anything. All the naysayers were right. Our minds are like gardens. If we just let them to themselves, we're going to get a lot of weeds that grow in there. We're going to hear the news, all the negativism, and that's going to grow and multiply. Yeah. But you know, if we're intentional, we can plant tomatoes and herbs and lettuce and radish. We can plant the things we want in there. They'll grow as well.
That's so true.
In that old car that radio didn't work, I carried a little battery-operated cassette player.
Yes, the Walkman type.
Every minute I was in that car, between calls where they said, no, go away, I was listening to positive, pure, clean input from the old master, Zig Ziglar, Jim Rohn, Dennis Waitley, Napoleon Hill, Earl Nightingale. I was just consuming that. And I committed that I would spend, no matter what, at least 2 hours a day listening to that. Wow. That had such dramatic effect on me that I've never stopped. Yeah. I don't want to break that cycle.
Yeah.
I don't want to break the positive benefits.
So good.
Instead of listening to news and instead of listening to naysayers out there, I'm hearing about, wow, the positive, born to win. Wow. Stop that stinking thinking. Check up from the neck up. The story of being cooked in the squat. I'm not that person. I'm rising up. So all these things, the terminology, and my kids, you know, those phrases are so implanted in them now. You know, my little boy who was part of that period of time, you know, now hosts the Zig Ziglar podcast. He's a voice in that organization. And I love seeing the ripple effect of that. That's not connected just to dollars, but again, thinking like that opens the door to any kind of dollars that you want.
Absolutely. Like Dan, there's a guy, I don't know if I've ever publicly thanked him, but Dustin Godshell. Okay. So he was the co-pastor with me at my, at the church where I was. And again, nothing wrong with being a pastor, liked part of it, but Dustin said to me, cause he knew I wasn't fully fulfilled there. He said, you got to check out this guy named Dan Miller. He said, you know, cause he was a big Dave Ramsey fan. And you know, I didn't know anything about Dave Ramsey. You know, I was the victim. You know, I was like, woe is me and all this jazz. But I read your book and I'm like, someday, you just blew my mind. I'm like, someday I'm going to meet him. Now, I want you to realize this, folks, okay? Because again, right now you're sitting there thinking as far as you can think. Think as far as you can think and then realize, you know what? It takes no more brain power to think 10 times further, right? In other words, if I think going to the sun, man, that's far. Well, what about going to the edge of the galaxy? You know, it's no further. But what I did, Dan, is you gave me a vision to say, I'm not born into my situation. I can actually get a new hand. And now look today, Dan, we've been to Shawshank together. I mean, I remember you were gracious and Dan is gracious. I wrote him one time and said, will you endorse my book? And you said, yes. And I, you know, sent you that carved pen with the box, you know, and all that. And I found out that you liked Cracker Barrel. Man, I studied you. I was like, I want to give this guy value. And here's how you connect with people. I wanted to be a hero to you. Have you ever done that, Dan? Have you ever said, you know what? I want to grow from somebody. I'm going to find out how to be a hero to them and add value. I know you've done that.
Absolutely.
Talk about that. Is that a shortcut to success? Not bribing people, but literally saying no strings attached. How can I be a blessing and add value? Why does that fast track you to success?
You know, this has been a real recurring theme, even as I've been talking about this book.
Interesting.
The reason I'm experiencing success today is not because I know how to use fancy Facebook ads or Instagram or TikTok or LinkedIn or any of those things. The reason I'm successful today in whatever degree that I am experiencing is because of relationships that I have.
Wow.
Richard, relationships. And that's why I have so much confidence in my continued success. I started what I'm doing, as you know, teaching a Sunday school class. It wasn't designing a business. It was teaching a Sunday school class, just service and ministry. You know, you had a lot of the same background.
Oh, yeah.
And the business grew out of that simply as an extension of serving people.
Serve.
I focused on the relationships over the years that I've had. But I started this business before we had any of those social tools, media tools that I talked about, before we had blogs or podcasts. Well, now people think, oh, you have to use all these things and you have to have, you know, you use ClickFunnels and be really slick and polished and use a lot of hype. And no, you don't. If you're building relationships, you're opening the door for exponential success.
Interesting. Let's
That's
talk
what
about
I focus on.
Let's talk about that, because I did listen to your podcast the other day, but a gentleman said on your podcast, he asked a question, something like, how can I get featured on everybody else's podcast? And how can I get my book out there? And you told the story, and that's why we're here today. You told the story about mailing a couple of these books out to people that you had already known for years, invested in for years, showed up at their places for years. Tell us what happened when you sent out a few of these books versus other people who don't know anybody and they're sending things out. How many times did you get booked, highlighted, featured? And I know it was just a result of all the relational deposits you'd done. Tell us that little story there.
Yeah. So in promoting a book, I mean, we all want to know how to do that. I know you've got a big audience of people who are wanting to know how to promote my book. I get a lot of books sent to me. I'm privileged in that. My shelves behind us are empty because we're redecorating my office. We're in the process of painting all that. But I'm a book guy, as you are. I have lots and lots of books sent to me because people are begging, gee, please promote my book. People I've never heard of, for the most part. With my new book, I set out 50 boxes like you got with two books in there. But those were not to just random people or people who have big audiences, and I just want to borrow their credibility to kind of squeeze my message in there. No, they were simply to people with whom I have long-term relationships, people like you. So I sent out 50 of those. There was not even a call to action in there. It was just, you know, if I can serve you and your audience well in some way, please let me know. I immediately started booking, getting requests. Oh my gosh, I want to have you on. And I think the number actually right out of the gate was 36.
Wow.
Well, adding those, I just yesterday added interviews with Pat Flynn and John Lee Dumas.
Love it.
Those are two names you know.
Oh, yeah.
You guys have massive audiences. It wasn't because they showed up, here shows up a book that they never heard of before. No, it's because I've been nurturing relationships with those guys 10, 15 years.
Yes.
I promote what they do.
Yes.
I get excited about their courses and we share that. My gosh, Pat Flynn's podcast tutorial is second to none. We send everybody there, go there. I didn't try to duplicate it, make him. No, he's the guy. You know, John Lee Dumas, Entrepreneur on Fire, podcast every day, incredible information. Listen to it. So it's this cross-pollination where everybody succeeds together. It's not one person because he's using everybody else. So that's that old model. People think, well, somebody's successful financially, especially, well, somehow they used everybody. They see wealth as a pizza, where if I take a piece, you have less.
Wow.
That's not the way it is. Wealth is created. We can all thrive because we develop new ideas, share things together. But yeah, so that's what I'm having the privilege of doing now is conversation with people like you. This is not brand new where we don't know each other.
Right.
We know each other. You know my family. I know your family. I've been in your house. You've been in my house. You know,
absolutely.
The conversations are very, very different. But that's more important than trying to get slick with technology. Nurture relationships. There's nothing I can tell you that will escalate your success more than nurtured relationships. And that doesn't mean calculated so they can you can somehow manipulate that for your own benefit. I meet people every day. I have no idea. We just moved into a new neighborhood. We are having delightful lunches and dinners, engagement with people. I have no idea where that's going to lead. But we're developing the relationships.
Love it.
I'm sure that some of those are going to have some kind of relationship with my business. And I mean, I talked to a dermatologist yesterday for an hour. I don't want to be a dermatologist. I don't need a dermatologist, but he's a neighbor.
Yes.
So I'm
knowing you, you're going to meet someone who says, man, you know, I got this skin problem. And you're going to say, you know what? I know someone who can totally connect, you know, and that's how it happens. You're a giver everywhere you go. And I love it. Dan, we're going to give away the book. Well, I'm going to challenge everybody. Like, this is, in my opinion, top 10 reading. Meaning if you're an entrepreneur or a wantrepreneur or a solopreneur, whatever you are, you need to get this book because it's going to grow you. I'm here today because of it. Like, I don't think there's any stronger testimony than that. I mean, it literally lifted me out and God used it. And our relationship just to, you know, fast track me.
Thanks so much for listening to the Igniting Souls podcast. As a subscriber, we challenge you to be more than just a passive listener. Show up, filled up, and become a member of the tribe. Visit us on the web at carrieoberbrunner.com. Remember, the most powerful weapon on earth is the human soul on fire.